SDPB has also been bringing you updates from the South Dakota Legislature's Initiative and Referendum Task Force. The most recent task force meeting was held Friday in Pierre at the state capitol. We're joined now by Emily Wanless. She's assistant professor of political science at Augustana University in Sioux Falls. She is chair of the task force. Emily, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, Lori.
So what was the purpose, sort of the agenda of Friday's meeting? How you're at the point where you're making recommendations, as I understand it.
Yes. So we had our last meeting was in Pierre in August. And we made forth a number of recommendations, I believe 9 recommendations. And towards the end of the day, we came to the conclusion we weren't going to be able to tackle a proposal that was brought forth by several members of the task force dealing with the citizen review panel that would be charged with kind of conducting public hearings, gathering information, and then increasing education and awareness about the ballot measures. We had several proposals that came forth that were a little bit different in a number of aspects, and so we decided to convene one last time after a subcommittee was formed to deal with settling the discrepancies between the different iterations. And so we met on last week to go over that proposal that came from the subcommittee.
All right. So what was on the table last week? Is it the citizen review panel? Is that...
Yeah, okay. It was a citizen review panel, sorry. Yeah. So subcommittee met via email, kind of conversed back and forth, identifying things we were in agreement on, identifying things that we were in disagreement on. We worked together pretty well, I think, and came together with a proposal. The subcommittee then met via teleconference. So there were some in Pierre, there were a couple of us in Sioux Falls, and then scattered throughout the state. And we just kind of went through the bill. There were some amendments offered. And we ended up actually getting rid of half of it and keeping half. So we are recommending as a task force that there is a citizen review commission that would be responsible for conducting hearings on ballot measures, and then drafting a summary, which would be available on the Secretary of State's website for voters to kind of feel comfortable knowing that they're getting a nonpartisan view on these ballot measures.
What does that look like in practice?
So the commission itself will be, or would be, 11 members appointed by the South Dakota Board of Elections. Mm-hmm. It cannot have more than half from one political party, and they would meet in Pierre with remote access to other areas in the state at least one time. We made an amendment that the language was changed from one meeting to at least one meeting, so that if there was the sense that maybe a meeting needed to be held in a particular geographic location because of the ballot measure's content, that would be able to, there would be some flexibility there. So they'd meet at least once, conduct hearings from, taking testimony from the public, taking testimony from those that are involved with the ballot measures, and then the commission itself would draft the summary, kind of overviewing what exactly the ballot measure would be doing.
All right. So do they have the... authority, that's not the right word, but for lack of a better word, I mean, are they going to be able to get, feedback on what the implications of the bill would be? You know, if implemented, it would cost this much, or, I mean, is that within
Sure.
their purview?
Sure. So the Legislative Research Council will already be drafting a fiscal note that would go along with any ballot measure. I'm not going to be part of the commission necessarily, but the commission would take testimony from the Legislative Research Council as to their interpretation of the bill, any kind of problems that they may have identified upon their review, which is something that they already do, and that information is publicized on the Secretary of State's website. But this is just an effort to kind of get it out before the voters one more time to try and draw awareness And maybe publicize some of these issues. So the Legislative Research Council would be offering information up, such as a fiscal note, as well as their interpretation of what the law would do.
So who writes the summary then? The group just sort of decides on what the summary will be. It's supposed to be objective?
Correct. It is supposed to be objective. You know, we're hoping that by it coming from a commission designed for more of a transparent, nonpartisan viewpoint to come up with something it's largely meant to educate the voters as to what exactly it is they're voting on.
When you mentioned no more than half of one political party or the other, that makes me think about the fracturing of political parties right now. So let's say you have no more than half Republicans, but if you're a Republican, you might consider vast differences in the philosophy of one Republican versus another in the state, and that's talked about a lot. How do you, how are those folks going to be selected to ensure that all sides are sort of represented on that panel?
Well, we discussed a number of ways to select the people, and we felt most comfortable with the Board of Elections picking these people, if for no other reason than they should have an understanding of people who maybe have been involved in ballot measures in the past, who would be appropriate given the content of the ballot measure, to be somebody who could review the merits of the ballot measure. One of the changes that we did make was the initial proposal said at least two legislators and then no more than four current or former legislators. And one of the changes that we made was to limit the ability of current legislators to participate. An amendment was made to try and change the balance of the partisan nature to account for the fact that, if it were appointed six Democrats and six Republicans, well, I guess it'd be one fewer than that because there's only 11, then that would necessarily eliminate any sort of third party like a Libertarian or Independent. But I guess the language I would take as it no more than. So it could be that there are less appointed. It doesn't necessarily equate to exactly, fulfilling all the seats by a partisan balance.
And is it a different, same commission for every ballot issue? So if there's 10 issues that make it on the ballot, do you have 10 different commissions? Do you have one commission that's reviewing all 10?
We have one commission reviewing every ballot measure for that election cycle. And so one of the things in a perfect world we would have been able to do was hold, three hearings on every ballot measure, one in Pierre, one in Sioux Falls, or somewhere East River and one in Rapid City or somewhere West River. But that would be probably something that's feasible if there are two or three ballot measures. But let's say it's something like in 2016 where we had, 10 ballot measures, then that the work becomes just too cumbersome. So that's why we had to limit it to at least one. Mm-hmm. But the entire commission would be reviewing. So you have 11 sets of eyes and ears listening at these hearings.
Right. Is it going to change then how we, when do voters find this information? Are they seeking out the details online prior to voting? Is it something that is available to them on their ballot at the polls if they show up the day to vote and say, I didn't know there were 10 ballot measures, I haven't been paying attention?
Right.
When do they get the information and the results from the Citizen Review Commission?
The Citizen Review Commission, one of the things that we discussed and one of the major pieces that was gutted from the proposal was the initial proposal had a voter brochure, information brochure, that would have published all of the information that the Secretary of State currently publishes, things like the full text of the ballot measure, the Attorney General's statement, the pro-con statements, as well as the information gathered from the commission. The cost of that voter brochure was significant, and so as a result, it was determined by the task force that was not a cost that could be justified. And so as a result, only the summary will be available on the Secretary of State's website. I would note, though, that voters can always go to the Secretary of State's website to get access a tremendous amount of information about these ballot measures, the attorney general statement, pro-con statements, full text of the ballot measure, the Legislative Research Council's language, the fiscal note, all that stuff is available. Voters will just have to seek it out. The traditional voter guide that goes out by the Secretary of State would remain. It is something that will still be produced and available for voters at their county auditor's office. And so one of the things that I hope that comes out of this task force is that people become aware of ways that they can educate themselves on these ballot measures, because the Secretary of State does a great job of compiling all of the requisite information. It just is a matter of having to go and find it.
Is there a cost to voters for the Citizen Review Commission? Are they paid? Is their travel compensated?
There is the standard, we are proposing the standard per diem as well as travel costs that are incurred. And so there were some numbers thrown out. I would not be comfortable saying that we settled on what exactly one of these hearings would cost. There was some discrepancy amongst people who kind of throw those numbers out. So there would be some costs, but it would not be, you know, anything out of the ordinary in terms of what they would be paid or you know, the travel required of them.
What's next? What happens next to the recommendations? Where do they go?
Yep. So all of the recommendations will go to the executive committee's, the executive board's next committee meeting in November on the 13th. We're drafting a summary of kind of what the task force did, how many times we met, things that we discussed, and then we'll go over the drafted pieces of legislation that we would like to put forth as a committee. The executive board would then determine which of those to pursue. When we pass them, we all designated a sponsor in both the House and the Senate, and where the bill should originate, should it be something that the executive board would like to pursue. All that being said, the work that we've done, if the legislature chooses to disregard it, it could be disregarded. If legislators outside of the task force want to take up an issue that maybe failed out of the task force, but something that we discussed, that's their prerogative, as well as amend any of the measures that we put forth. So it's a good starting point. I think it brings up a lot of conversations that need to be had in the state. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether or not the bills that we put forth, you know, are passed through both chambers and signed by the governor, I don't know. But I think that if nothing else, it got the conversation started, and that's important.
How many pieces of drafted legislation do you anticipate going forward, or how many are you sending up to the next level?
I believe we have 10 that we're putting forth. Some of the more significant ones are raising the voter threshold for constitutional amendments to 55% rather than a pure majority. That's a significant change. Another significant change was the revision of the recitation statement. So, you know, if you vote yes, this will be what happens. If you vote no, this is what will happen. So a simplification of that. We've made some proposals to the way that the LRC conducts their business in terms of the time frame they have to review and what exactly they will be offering up upon their review. And then the last major change, other than the Citizen Review Commission, would be that we have suggested removing the full text of a ballot measure on the petitions being circulated for signatures and making that available to every voter to take with them, but having it on the actual signature petition. The font is so small, and some of these ballot measures are so big that we just felt that people were not reading them, and that it could be an opportunity for increased voter awareness if they were able to take that ballot measure with them.
Mm. Anything that ended up not passing that you sort of anticipate, you know, has traction from other lawmakers that you think the legislature might see ahead that didn't come through the committee?
The most contentious issue that we had was this: the idea of needing a supermajority in the legislature to amend any ballot measure any ballot measure that was passed. by the voters. We put forth, I think that 3/4 of the legislature would be needed in order to amend a ballot measure. Otherwise, it would need to be kind of off limits for legislators. The idea kind of it was stemmed from IM-22, but it's certainly not something that's unique to South Dakota. There's a number of states that have kind of a supermajority requirement to basically allow the legislature to amend anything that the voters have approved.
Emily Wanless is assistant professor of political science at Augustana University in Sioux Falls. She's been chairing the state legislature's initiative and referendum task force over the months and giving us updates as the group has met. Emily, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time.
Awesome. Thank you so much.